You're listening to ESL Podcast English Cafe, number 439. This is English as a Second Language Podcast English Cafe, episode 439. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Our website is ESLPOD.com. Go there and become a member of ESL Podcast. You can also look at our ESL Podcast blog on our website, as well as our ESL Podcast store. In this cafe, we're going to talk about one of the greatest engineering projects in modern history, the Panama Canal. We'll also talk a little bit about a famous song from the 1950s called Fever. And as always, we'll answer a few of your questions. Let's get started. We begin this cafe talking about the Panama Canal. A canal, C-A-N-A-L, is a narrow passage, we might call it, of water, sort of like a river, that connects two larger bodies of water. For example, a canal might connect a lake and an ocean, or it might connect two different lakes. Lakes and oceans are bodies of water, large areas of water. The Panama Canal connects the Atlantic Ocean and the Pacific Ocean. It's located in what is now the country of Panama in Central America. The canal is man-made. When we say something is man-made, we mean it was built by human beings. It was not something that was found there, created by nature, if you will. It's something that people actually had to build. The Panama Canal was man-made and allows ships to travel from one side to the other, from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific, or the Pacific Ocean to the Atlantic, traveling through the country of Panama. The Panama Canal opened in 1914, but the idea for a canal is quite old. In fact, when the Spanish explorers first came to the New World, as it was called, they had the idea of starting a canal, of building a canal, to connect the two oceans. That was back in the 16th century, in the 1500s. An explorer, E-X-P-L-O-R-E-R, is a person who goes and finds out about a new land, a place that no one has gone before. The Spanish explorers had the idea of connecting the two oceans with a canal, but there were a lot of problems that they were not able to solve, especially with the technology they had available. One of the problems is that the area where the canal is now located is full of large hills and mountains that you have to cut through. Another problem is that this area of Central America was at the time mostly jungle. Jungle, J-U-N-G-L-E, is when you have a forest or a lot of trees and plants growing very closely together. Typically, jungles are very hot and very rainy. Jungles are also places where there are some diseases that can easily be contracted by humans. To contract a disease is to get a disease. In the jungles of Panama, malaria and yellow fever were both very common, and both of them were also very deadly. People who got one of these diseases, which causes a high fever or a high temperature in the body, often died from the disease. In the 19th century, in the 1800s, Panama was under the control of the country of Colombia. Colombia decided to give permission to a French company to build a canal through the area of Panama. The French company was run by a very famous man at that time, Ferdinand de Lesseps. He was a diplomat. He was not an engineer. He was a person that dealt really with political issues between countries. However, de Lesseps had just finished helping organize the building of another great canal, the Suez Canal, which opened in 1869, connecting the Red Sea to the Mediterranean Sea. De Lesseps was one of the main people responsible for getting the Suez Canal built. And logically, when he submitted a proposal, when his company submitted a proposal to Colombia, the Colombians thought, well, this guy already helped build one canal. He can build the canal here in Panama. Well, unfortunately, Panama and the Middle East, where the Suez Canal is located, have very different geographies. The land and environment is completely different. The proposal or plan by de Lesseps' company was not a very good one. Nevertheless, a lot of people gave the company money to build this canal, and in 1881, de Lesseps' company began to build the canal. Over the next few years, however, it became clear that the canal was not going to be built. One problem was that they did not do a very good survey or analysis of the land where the canal was supposed to be built. The engineers and the workers didn't have the proper equipment, the proper machines, in order to do the kind of work that was required to build a canal. Eventually, many of the workers and engineers got sick from the diseases we mentioned earlier, malaria and yellow fever, and many people died during the attempted construction. The project basically was a disaster. The French government, in fact, accused de Lesseps and his company of fraud. Fraud, F-R-A-U-D, is when you lie to other people, usually to gain something, usually to get their money. De Lesseps' son actually was briefly sent to prison in 1892. In 1902, the U.S. government decided that it was interested in building a canal, and so the Congress of the United States passed something called the Spooner Act. This was a law that gave money to build the canal as long as the government could negotiate a treaty with Colombia, which, of course, owned the area, which is now the country of Panama. The U.S. government then tried to negotiate a treaty with Colombia to build the canal, But there were problems. The two countries could not come to an agreement. Fortunately for the United States, and I'm sure it wasn't just by luck, the people living in the Panama region decided to declare their independence from the country of Colombia. The United States immediately recognized this new country and decided it would negotiate their treaty now with the new government of Panama. The new government was eager to negotiate a treaty, and in 1904, the United States government, under the leadership of President Theodore Roosevelt, started construction of the Panama Canal. Now, the new Panama Canal was not the same as the one the French started to build. They used a different plan, interestingly enough, from another engineer from France who had a much better plan on how to build the canal. The interesting thing about the treaty that the U.S. government signed with Panama was that it gave the United States basically control not only of running the Panama Canal, but of the area around the canal, about a 10-mile area around the canal, was basically U.S. government property. And the U.S. government had its own schools, its own governor, its own legal system established in this Panama Canal zone. The Panamanians were not very happy about this agreement, many of them. From 1904 until 1914, more than 40,000 workers were part of the building of the Panama Canal using a better engineered system. The American construction workers were able to build this new canal and keep most of the workers from dying from malaria and yellow fever, which, as I said, was a problem with the previous French efforts. The canal was opened in 1914 and continued in operation as an American-run organization for the next 70 years or so. In the mid-1970s, the American government and the Panamanian government came to a new agreement, which was signed by then-President Jimmy Carter, to return the Panama Canal Zone to the Panamanians. In 1979, the U.S. government returned the property around the canal to Panama, although both countries ran the canal jointly, that is, together, for the next 20 years until 1999. And since 1999, Panama has had sole ownership and control of the canal. However, as part of the negotiations over returning the canal to Panama in the late 1970s, there was an additional treaty that was signed, an additional agreement that gave the U.S. government the right, if necessary, to use military force to keep the canal open. And in fact, in 1989 and 1990, that was in part the justification for intervening in Panama using the U.S. military. The canal itself is around 80 kilometers long, depending on how you measure it. It has more than 10,000 people working at the canal, which is open 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Thousands of ships go through the canal each year. Its main purpose is now, as it has always been, is trade, the passing of ships through the canal that are bringing goods and supplies to different parts of the world. Although most ships can go through the canal, there are some now that are so big that they will not fit they are too big. Any ship more than 110 feet wide, for example, that would be about 33 meters, is too wide and will not be able to go through the canal. They would have to go down around the continent of South America, like ships used to do before the Panama Canal. The Panama Canal is one of the great engineering feats or accomplishments of the 20th century. It has allowed international trade to be much more efficient and allowed countries all over the world to send their goods, their products to other parts of the world using a much faster route than was previously available. Now let's move on to our second topic, which is a famous song from the 1950s called Fever. We mentioned fever a few moments ago in talking about yellow fever, one of the diseases that one could contract in the Panama Canal Zone. This, however, is not a song about getting sick, at least not physically sick. Fever was written by two songwriters, Otis Blackwell and Eddie Cooley. Blackwell, however, didn't use his real name when he published the song. He used what we would call a pseudonym, P-S-E-U-D-O-N-Y-M. A pseudonym is a false name that a writer or an artist adopts or takes instead of their real name. Here in Hollywood, many actors change their names to something that they think sounds better. We would probably call those stage names, but the idea is the same. Why did Blackwell use a pseudonym? Well, in part, he himself was black. He was an African-American man. He thought the song would be more successful if people thought he was a white man, so he used the name of John Davenport, thinking apparently that it sounded more like a white person's name. The song was first recorded by a singer named Little Willie John in 1956, and it became so popular it was one of the 40 most popular songs in the country that year. A couple of years later, in 1958, Peggy Lee, a jazz singer, covered the song. When we say an artist or a singer covers a song, we mean they sing a song that someone else has already released and has sold. Peggy Lee's version also became famous, more famous than the original version by Little Willie John. When people think of this song, they usually think of the version by Peggy Lee. Fever is a song about deep physical attraction to someone, romantic or sexual attraction to another person. The singer is singing to her lover in this song, singing to the man she loves. I will attempt to sing a little of it, but you really must go to YouTube and search for Peggy, P-E-G-G-Y, Lee, L-E-E, and Fever, F-E-V-E-R. The song has a great beginning with a drum and what sounds like someone snapping their fingers. To snap, S-N-A-P, your finger is to make a noise with your finger like this. Never know how much I love you. Never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning, fever all through the night. As I said, you really have to listen to the original version to get the full effect of the song. The song begins by the singer saying, "Never know how much I love you." This is another way of saying you never know. You don't hear, they don't include the word you, but that's understood. You never know how much I love you. You will never know how much I care. It's not possible for you to know because I love you so much, is the idea. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever, my temperature goes up, that's so hard to bear, B-E-A-R. To bear here means to put up with, to tolerate. The other part of the song, the chorus of the song, is fairly easy to understand. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight, T-I-G-H-T. To hold someone tight is to put your arms around her and hold, in this case, her body close to yours, or his body close to yours. The song continues on and compares the love that the singer has for her husband or boyfriend or whomever as being like Romeo and Juliet, the famous couple from the Shakespeare play, but also like a couple of figures from early American history, Captain John Smith and Pocahontas. Captain Smith was an Englishman who had arrived to the New World, what is now the United States, and met a beautiful young Native American or American Indian woman named Pocahontas. Pocahontas had a father who was the chief or ruler of one of the Indian tribes. According to the story, Smith and Pocahontas fell in love, which of course was something that was considered somewhat forbidden, something considered rather unusual and perhaps not acceptable, especially to the father of Pocahontas, the chief of the Indian tribe. The song talks about how Captain Smith and Pocahontas had a mad affair. That word mad is very common in English. Usually it means angry. However, mad can also mean very passionate, very intense, very deep. And that's the meaning that the lyrics here are trying to convey. These two people loved each other very much, just the way the singer loves the person she's singing to in the song. There have been other singers that have recorded this song, Elvis, Madonna, Michael Bublé, and someone called Beyoncé. I'm not sure who that is. They've all sung this song as well. But the words of the song, and especially the original of the song, which I think if you hear, you will agree, have a very powerful effect on the listener. And you really feel the intensity of this love that the singer has for her beloved. Now let's answer some of the questions that you have sent to us. Our first question comes from Yasser, Y-A-S-S-E-R, in Iran. Yasser wants to know the meanings of the words squander, lavish, and waste. To squander, S-Q-U-A-N-D-E-R, means to use something or spend your money carelessly, or we might say recklessly, without thinking about the consequences of what you're doing, or without caring about whether you keep whatever it is you're wasting or spending or not. To squander here means something very similar to the more general word, which is to waste, W-A-S-T-E. To waste also means to use or spend carelessly or recklessly whatever it is that you are using or spending. Squander is somewhat of a less common word. It's a little more likely to be found in written English. To waste, however, is a very common word and can be used in talking about money. We can talk about wasting time. We can talk about wasting our talents or wasting an opportunity. All of these are similar in meaning. They are giving you the idea that you're not taking advantage of or you're not using properly whatever it is that you are wasting. To lavish, L-A-V-I-S-H, as a verb means to spend a lot of money, especially in a way that is considered perhaps excessive. The word lavish is not as common as a verb as it is as an adjective. When used as an adjective, it definitely has the meaning of usually being very expensive and often very extravagant, too expensive. As a verb, it typically is followed by the preposition on. You lavish praise on someone. You give someone a lot of praise. You say very nice things about them. Or you lavish gifts on your new girlfriend. That's a bad idea, by the way. Not in the beginning. Don't give your girlfriend an expensive gift in the first week of your relationship. Generally speaking, not a good idea. But getting back to our definitions, waste and squander, then, are similar in meaning, with waste being the more common and squander being the more literary or less often used. Lavish is most commonly found as an adjective, which means too expensive or very extravagant. As a verb, it is usually used not necessarily in a negative way, but to talk about someone who is giving a lot of something to a person. Norbert, N-O-R-B-E-R-T, in Germany, wants to know the meanings of the words self-conscious, self-confident, and self-aware. All three of these words have the word self, S-E-L-F, in them, but they mean fairly different things. To be self-conscious, C-O-N-S-C-I-O-U-S, means to care a lot and to think a lot about the way you look, especially the way other people look at you. Normally, self-conscious is a negative way of describing someone. People who are self-conscious are worried about what other people will say about them. They're worried about other people criticizing them often. Self-confident is in some ways the opposite. To be self-confident, C-O-N-F-I-D-E-N-T, means to trust in your abilities, to know that you are able to do what you are doing. Someone who's self-confident is someone who, we might say, believes in himself. To be self-aware, A-W-A-R-E, means simply to be aware of your own emotions, your own character, your own appearance. To be aware of yourself. So to be self-aware means that you understand yourself. That's usually the use that you will most often encounter with self-aware. Someone who's self-aware is said to understand himself, To be self-aware, like to be self-confident, are usually positive qualities in describing someone. To be self-conscious is usually a negative thing. Finally, Oliver, O-L-I-V-E-R, also in Germany, wants to know the meaning of an expression he heard on an American news show. He is as tough as they come. He is as tough, T-O-U-G-H, as they come. The expression, as tough as they come, means someone who can be described as very strong. The word tough means strong, both physically strong or mentally and psychologically strong. The word come here doesn't mean to arrive at a place. It means available. We talk about products in a store coming in certain colors. If you go to the store and you want to buy a shirt and they only have blue ones, you might ask the person working there, does this shirt come in red? Is it available? Can I get it? The expression as tough as they come describes a person who is one of the strongest that you will ever find, someone who is very tough, perhaps physically as well as mentally. That's the meaning of the expression as tough as they come. You can substitute other adjectives. He is as dumb as they come. That's not quite as common, unless you're talking about my neighbor. If you have a question or comment, you can email us. Our email address is ESLPOD@ESLPOD.com. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thank you for listening. Come back and listen to us again right here on The English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe was written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan and Dr. Lucy Say. This podcast is copyright 2014 by the Center for Educational Development.